Welcome to Tip Top, growing up your business with Metronomics. We will be talking with business thought leaders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and business team coaches who have all taken the journey to grow up their businesses to their tip top. We will be sharing strategies, systems, and stories on how you can grow up your company at the speed you want. If you are searching for your path to the tip top and feel your time is running out, then this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Shannon Susco. Well, welcome back, everyone. Today I have Tim. And Tim, we just had a little joke about phonic pronouncements of name, but I'm going to say Tim Kachuriak, CEO and founder of Next After.
That's right.
Say your last name for me because I don't think I said it right.
Yeah, you nailed it. Kachuriak, you nailed it.
Okay. See,
you're just being insecure because there's too many letters, but I totally get it.
All right. I can't imagine. Maybe we'll talk later what nicknames you might have had when you were younger, but we'll go with that. So CEO, but really, you know, we just talked about Chief Innovation and Optimization Officer for Next After.
That's right.
So welcome. I'm really glad to have you here and to learn. Like I looked into your background, what you've been doing, lots of really good things that matter. And I really want to, you know, understand how you got started and then what's driving you today for everything that you do. So start with how did you get started? Like, where did you start in business and what you do today?
Yeah. So I grew up, I live in Dallas now, but I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I graduated from college right after 9/11, which was a really tough time to enter into really any job market.
Yes.
But especially for me, because I desperately knew, like from being a young child, that I wanted to work in the field of advertising and marketing. It's something I always like, you know, I would watch TV so I could watch the commercials, right? So I knew that that was what I wanted to do. And, you know, fortunately, like all during high school and college, I worked at a country club. So I had 432 aunts and uncles that were captains of industry. So, you know, I called Uncle Joe when I needed a job. And Joe Blattner was the president of the country club. He was the president of the second largest ad agency in Pittsburgh. I went and met with him. I did my little dog and pony show. And he's like, look, I'd love to hire you, kid, but we just laid off 30 people yesterday. You know, 9/11 has hit our industry harder, agency harder, can't help you. So, you know, wandering in the wilderness, just trying to find somebody to give me a shot. I met a serial entrepreneur. He had operated a number of small businesses. He's like, you can do some marketing projects for these little companies I operate. And I said, that sounds great. And then he looked at me and he says, well, why don't you start a company? I said, well, I don't know how to do that. He's like, well, I do. We've got an incubator on the second floor of our office building. I'll give you a desk. I'll be your partner. I'll introduce you to people. And the rest is up to you, kid. So I'm kind of like looking like, I was like, that sounds freaking great. I mean, like I'm living in my parents' basement. I've got no overhead, no romantic interest. I was like, this is the perfect time.
Right.
And I learned a ton about operating a business during those first few years because, I mean, you know, I'm coming right out of college. I had never worked anywhere.
Right.
So I had no understanding where the bar was set. And being insecure, like most, you know, post-college grads are, I guess I just kept exceeding, you know, what people's expectations were. And so, you know, I did that for 5 years, got out of the incubator, had a small staff, had my own little office, and it was great. I learned a lot about business, getting clients and keeping them happy and all that kind of stuff. But then I had this kind of crisis of career because I loved what I was doing, but I wasn't really excited about the clients we were working with. I mean, they were like, you know, a lot of automotive dealerships and law firms and whatever. And so I had the opportunity to help out with a capital campaign and do all the marketing materials for this, you know, campaign to go build this new building. And I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. I'm doing marketing, but for a cause I care about, this feels pretty good. And so at that point, I decided I wanted to go and pursue a new career. In a matter of 45 days, I sold my house, sold my business, moved from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, went to work for a nonprofit organization. The day I got there, the founder had a heart attack, which I should point out that correlation is not causation. At least I hope not. I hope I wasn't the reason. but what happened was we went from like a $36 million a year organization to 18 in less than 12 months. It was crazy.
Wow.
So that was my first violent shove into fundraising. They're like, look, whatever you're doing on the internet, figure out how that raises money. And I discovered that there's basically like these marketing agencies that work exclusively with nonprofits. I got recruited to come work for one in Dallas. That's how I got here in 2008. They hired me because they had been doing direct mail for 30 years and they wanted to move into digital. And, you know, I was their guy. And did that for a couple of years. We got acquired by another agency. And then but between those two experiences, I realized that there was a huge opportunity to focus on fundraising optimization, which is what Next After does today. And that's when I left to do that.
So explain a little bit more.
Yeah.
Fundraising optimization. So who do you work with? You know, what do you do? How do you do it?
Yeah, no, we're kind of set up where we're really three things. So we're a fundraising research lab, we're a consultancy and a training institute. And in the research lab, we do two types of research, like forensic research, where we analyze large amounts of data and we're trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. One of the ways we do that is by doing mystery donor studies. So we'll go subscribe to hundreds of different nonprofits, NGOs, charitable organizations at the same time. We'll monitor everything they send us, every email, text message, voicemail. When they ask us to give a donation, we go online to their website, we give donations, and then we monitor how they communicate with us over time. And we learn a lot about, like, you know, where the gaps exist. And then we take everything we learn over into like our fundraising testing lab, where we run rigorous scientific experiments, like testing different emails and different landing pages and different giving experiences, like everything that you can do online. We're testing A and B versions of those things, and we're monitoring how the donors respond in real time. And we take everything we learn over into our consultancy. We work with about 45 large nonprofit organizations across North America. We also have a franchise in Canada and one in Sydney, Australia. And then we take everything else and it goes into our training institute, where we train and equip nonprofit fundraisers to be more effective at digital fundraising.
Wow. It's the number one thing that not-for-profits, although their number one thing is to, you know, drive funds for their cause to make an impact. It's the hardest thing.
Sure.
Small, medium, large. So tell me about when you started it. Mm-hmm. You know, so you come up with this idea, you know, you have a team now, you know, you're in, well, I love that you're in Canada, in Vancouver, close to where I live. You're in Australia, but tell us about like some of the things you had to get right, some of the mistakes you made, just even getting it off the ground.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, so I left, it was a single shingle. So like the first year, like what I thought next after would be is not what it ended up turning out to be. So I thought it was going to be a consultancy that works with consultants, right? So my early clients were other agencies, technology companies. I was like, look, I see this new opportunity, fundraising, optimization, testing and experimentation. Nobody's doing this. I'll go work with these people that already have customers and we'll help build them a fundraising optimization division. Well, that's sounded great on paper. They signed contracts and, you know, I had like retainers, which gave me a really nice off ramp from, you know, a salary. Cause at this time I had like three kids and a mortgage and cars and, you know, all these things I have to pay for. So it was helpful from a, you know, kind of getting off of the payroll, so to speak. But once they got the client to sign on the dotted line, then they kind of pushed me out of the execution and, you know, they went back to doing things the way they had always done it. And I was like, wait a second, that's, you're just trading on my reputation and that's not cool. So I started weaning myself off those contracts and started working with nonprofits directly.
Right.
And in the early days, I had a former client who really just, you know, he believed very strongly in me. He's been a client now for, you know, the whole 10 years that we've known each other. And he kind of helped open a couple of doors, right? So he was almost like a silent partner.
Yeah.
And he would help bring me in and bolster my credibility with some of these early clients that I took on. And then, you know, things started to take off. And I was like, you know what? I don't really like being a single shingle. You know, I don't like being alone. My dad, he was an entrepreneur. He had his own business. It was a small company of five or six people, but he had a partner and his partner's name was Gary. And to me, he was always Uncle Gary because they went through life together and he would come over for holidays and picnics and I got to know his family. And it was like, that's kind of cool to have like somebody to journey with. So I went and on the day that my non-solicitation and non-compete expired, I went back to the agency that I had worked for previously. And I contacted my good friend, Jeff Giddens, who took over for my role when I left. I said, hey, man, what are you doing for the rest of your life? You know, and so he made the leap. And at that point, you know, I was like really financially like kind of conservative and like kind of made sure that I had some, I was like, look, I've got enough money in the bank. I can pay both of us for 6 months. Let's give it a shot, you know? And so he did that. And then we instantly doubled our capacity and it was awesome, right? And we doubled our revenue, but then we hit like this other plateau because both Jeff and myself are kind of more like general strategists, but we're not technicians, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We needed that person. And we knew a guy that did that same kind of work. He was like the technician at the previous agency. And so we convinced him to come over and it was a game changer because instead of like making, you know, we would make, you know, 20% margin on the projects because we'd outsource the execution. But once Kevin came on board, then we're able to insource it and we made 80% margin. So it was like a whole kind of like game change.
Right. Yeah. So I love that you take the experience you have from your dad and thinking about that. You go find a partner, and then, you know, you have the enough awareness to know, like, we can get this far. Like, how did that happen? Honestly, because a lot of times the first part, you're like, I can be on my own. You had that experience, right? And then you go with someone else. And then choosing that team is hard.
Yeah.
And most, you know, listeners who are listening in, and lots of entrepreneurs have made lots of mistakes. And, you know, on your website, you've got vision, mission, core values. Did you do that first?
No, because we couldn't possibly know what we were. I mean, like, here's what I believe. I know that, like, a lot of people say, oh, you got to go have your business plan and all your MVV all kind of like mapped out in advance. I was like, how could you possibly do that? You don't know what the culture of the company is until you operate it for a while. You don't even know what market you're in until you find things that value what you bring to the table, right? I feel like business is a discovery process. So, I mean, the mission, vision, values, that didn't emerge for probably, you know, maybe 4 years into the experience. But then we started to kind of think about it, and it's like, oh, we need to codify this now.
Yeah. And once you put that in place, did you lose anyone, or did it just like, yeah, thanks that we discovered it. Now we can talk about it. We know it, right? Because it's really foundational to your culture, right?
Yes.
But did you lose anyone?
You know, we had one person that we had hired that we worked with in the past. He was actually one of my competitors. And from the outside, we were like peers, like we're completely aligned. We go to the same conferences. You know, we talked about the day that we could work together. And then once our culture started to take shape, we realized very quickly that there's a mismatch here. Right. And that was really, really painful. So like that was kind of like a big miss, because this is somebody that, you know, we love, we respect, is like a great talent, but just doesn't fit. Right? Doesn't fit the culture.
Yeah. And you know, that's why I asked about the core values, because most people don't do that and they do it after the fact, right? Or they discover it, it's there. You're loving building this new business. Today, when you go to, you know, you've got a nice size team, it's a big team, what I can see. How many people on your team today?
50. I think we just hired our 50th employee.
Wow. This week. Congratulations. Yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. So how does that play in? How do you ingrain that in your organization today, that the cultural piece? Because we know how important it is, but sometimes in a company that's growing and we're on the move, it's hard to do.
Well, a number of different things. Number one, part of our onboarding process, we do kind of exhaustive training on mission, vision, values. But I also like meet with every single new staff member, and I take them through this rather long presentation that's like the history of Next After, and some of it's kind of like, you know, revised history. I kind of make things up, and you know, it's kind of fun and kitschy, but it just helps them kind of like see that the story of Next After evolved as people were added to the mix. Like the business is about people. And I always finish with the same slide. So it's like, you know, what's next for Next After? Well, I don't know, because I don't know what you brought here. You know what I mean? And we get to discover that together.
Yeah.
But then we kind of go into a discussion about our mission, vision, values, and we try to socialize those very, very often. Obviously, at every kind of all staff meeting, we recite those things. But we've also tried to find ways to get people to look for them in other people throughout the course of just regular work. So we use a software called Tiny Pulse that's kind of like a way ask questions and do survey stuff, but it also has this kind of cheers engine. And so anytime somebody posts a cheer for somebody, they have to attach it to one of our core values. So they're looking for those in other people.
Nice. That's fantastic. Fantastic. How'd you know to do all that? Because lots of companies get built, they don't know to do any of that. How did you know that?
I've always believed very strongly in having mentors, like people that can kind of help guide and provide consulting and just direction. And also like getting involved in peer advisory groups. So I have my whole leadership team. We're all involved in peer advisory groups. And so we bring new insights in from some of those, you know, meetings that we have once a month. But also we take our issues to that group of advisors and we get feedback on certain key things. And I've been challenged by some of the people in those peer advisory groups to put my values to the test. I'll give you an example. So one of our foundational, I would say it is the core value, is called, it's err on the side of generosity, right? So when you're facing a decision, you know what I mean? And you're not really sure, take the generosity route. It's probably not going to come and bite you in the end. And so I was expressing to my peer advisory group that we have this partner. So we, you know, forever we had outsourced the media buying component of our work to a broker, and we became really close with this company. And, you know, we're sending them millions of dollars of business every year.
Yes.
Well, at one point we kind of realized that we need to like bring that in house. I mean, there was business reasons for that, especially during election cycles, media becomes very expensive. And if you don't have the full weight of all of your media budget to negotiate with, then you kind of get left out in the cold. And so we knew that this was the right decision. We had to bring this in-house, but we knew that that was going to leave a huge hole in our friend's business. So what do you do in that scenario? And my group, they challenged me to say, well, what does your core values tell you? It yeah. says error on the side of generosity. What does that look like in this context? And I was like, oh, okay. And so what we end up doing is we brought the business in-house, but we sent back 40% of our commission for the entire year back to the other agency to help fill that hole that was left from us taking the business in-house. I mean, this is like hundreds of thousands of dollars of commission.
Totally.
And it worked out okay, I guess. I mean, they're still kind of felt betrayed and bewildered and all that kind of stuff, but we still stuck to our values. And I think that that was really important.
Well, and I think that's, I love that your peer group asked you that, because that's what peer groups are there. I've been part of one for years, and you know, they're there to help challenge mm-hmm. you on that, and we're clear on that. In your growth of the organization, mm-hmm. and I know there's many challenges we face along the way, but what are two that stand out for you? What are two that stand out for you?
Oh, well, somebody once told me that a leader, an effective leader, continues to work themselves out of a job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the personal struggle I've had. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll just keep doing that. And so the cool thing is, like, early on, my two partners, Jeff and Kevin, they said, look, we don't want to go build the Tim show. We want to build Next After. So like, you can't do the things anymore, right? I'm like, well, what do you want me to do? And they're like, I don't know, focus on sales and marketing, but we're going to go do the work. We're going to be the people
yes.
that the clients pick up the phone and call, not you.
Right.
And you know, that was like, ooh, but I love that. But I do that. That's my thing, you know? And so like, and then you just keep letting go of more and more and more of these things that you thought was your thing, and you make them somebody else's thing. And it leaves a hole inside of the leader. And I'm just like, well, what do I do? You know what I mean? Like, I come to work and I've always been the person, I know exactly what to do, but like, now there's other people that are in those roles.
Yeah.
And so the challenge is kind of saying, like, evolving as a leader and say, okay, do I need to go leave and start something else up? Because that's what I do. Like, I jump out of the airplane, I build my chute on the way to get, and that's what some founders do, right? They leave.
Yes.
Others will figure out a way to adapt and change and grow as a leader, and realize that how work looked in the past isn't how work is going to look in the future. And that's hard. I mean, it's really, really hard. So that's been probably one of the biggest challenges for me personally. I'd say the challenges for our team probably is, you know, we've always prided ourselves of being like innovative and fast and agile and all this kind of stuff. But as you kind of grow the organization, things start to slow down because you have to add process and structure and accountability and data and tracking and all these kinds of things that go into running a larger scale organization. And for people like me, that's very frustrating because like, I want to go fast. I'm like, why does this take so long? It didn't, in the old days, you know, this is like a part-time job for somebody. And now it's like, we've got a whole team and it can't do it as fast as we did it before. So there's that constant struggle. And I think there has to be a tension there, because my job is to go and like keep pushing us forward to the next thing.
Yes.
And realizing that they're not going to be able to go and run at the same pace. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. And there's like more process and things
yeah.
that we have to do.
Yeah.
And like, we are definitely not wired that way as entrepreneurs. Right.
No. And I'm the biggest disruption. I'm like the biggest like disruption to my team. And that's a struggle. But yeah, those are two kind of related issues. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when you think about where you've come from, what Next After is today, what's the thing that maybe there's probably many, but mm-hmm. like, what are the two big things that stand out? Like, I'm so proud of.
I'm so proud, first of all, that I didn't mess it up. Right. Honestly, like, I don't come from like a very like good business school or pedigree. You know, a lot of my learning,
I don't need any of that.
Is like, yeah, it's school of hard knocks. And so I'm just grateful that like, I didn't let my ego and my personal kind of like what I want out of the business prevent the business from growing and scaling to the point where it is and the point where it can go. And so like, now I'm encouraging my leadership team. I was like, remember how you told me years ago that I got to stop doing those things? Now you have to stop doing those things.
Yeah.
and they're struggling with that. Right.
Right.
So I'm really proud about that. And, you know, we just hit our 10-year anniversary this past May. That's a huge milestone, right?
It's huge.
To be in business that long and just be able to thrive and keep growing. And so those are two big accomplishments.
Cause you're among the very few that get to 10 years. That's for sure. What's one thing, and maybe there's a few things, but what's one thing on this journey that, you know, you didn't expect that was such a big, like, success? Like, well, what's one thing you didn't expect? But it's like, wow, that's the thing.
You know, I didn't expect that taking the approach of being generous with our IP, with our knowledge, would be the greatest strategy for growth, right? So what do I mean by that? So, you know, most people that do consulting stuff, like, you keep all your secret stuff really close to the vest, like it's your proprietary knowledge, your, you know, competitive advantage, whatever. And we're like, well, wait, we work in the nonprofit space. Like, we should be generous. What does that look like in the context of our business? Well, we run all these experiments. We've documented 4,000 experiments. We could keep all that knowledge to ourselves, or we could go and just open source it and make it available to the entire industry. And people are like, oh, but won't your competitors get it? Yes. And won't, like, some of the people that could be your clients get it and then they don't need you? Like, maybe, but that's usually not the case. So just being generous with our content has been the thing that has ignited our growth engine here at Next After. We don't have a sales team, right?
Right.
Everything comes through inbound because these are people that are being helped through the content assets that we put out there in the marketplace. They're like, wow, this is really cool. That really helped me. What else you got? You know?
Yeah.
Maybe we should work together. So that was a surprise. Yeah.
Yeah, that's always a surprise. Like, I asked, you know, I talked to lots of leaders, entrepreneurs, you know, successful organizations, and it's always surprising when we give what we know and it comes back like in spades.
Right.
Right. It's actually, you know, and I think, well, I think back when I actually started doing Metronomics, it wasn't called Metronomics when I started, but you know, someone asked, why did you write it all down step by step? And I said, like, I want, you know, it wasn't even to get anything back. It's because the biggest thing was, is that I personally could only coach 6 clients.
Right.
And I wanted everyone to have it.
Yeah.
Because like growing your business is hard and you can become pretty desperate and we don't need to, like, there's always light at the end of the tunnel and here's a progression that you could follow. Yeah. Right. You know,
that's awesome.
So I love that. It just made my day for sure. What do you think, you know, like, there's many different people on your team, you know, just listening to you, you've got that driver, like, I'm going to just drive right through and get this done. Like, I love how you said you didn't go to like the greatest school or all this, but who said you need that to build a company? Right.
Yeah, that's true.
But when you think of what's that trait or what's that thing, and it gets back to cultural and values, but that, you know, you look at your team today and your partner's been with you, right, for 10 years and others. What's been the thing, that personality trait or that strength that team members hold together to? And like, you've got 50 people now.
Yeah. So I would say that there's a few things. Like, one is insatiable curiosity. I would say that every member of our team, not just our leadership team, but every member of our team that really makes it and is effective is curious by nature. They're constantly saying, what if we tried this? What if we tested this? What if this happens or whatever, right? So I think that that's one. Two, I think, you know, having a spirit of generosity, of like actually saying, not what can I take from you? What can I bring to you? What do I have that I can use to help you with, right? I think those two things are probably the foundational elements, but, you know, also people that are, I would say a good number of folks on our team, especially the people in leadership position, are very competitive. So, you know, we want to win. And the cool thing about direct response marketing is, like, you know, if you're winning or if you're losing at any point in time based on the results, right? We've got data that tells us. So I'd say that that's, you know, probably another.
Love that. Those are good. I wasn't sure what you were going to say. So I love that. And curiosity is one of those things that we can, you know, you take to the end of time with curiosity. You just have to be curious to learn. And as entrepreneurs, we get to learn. So I've got a bit of speed round of questions. Some are a bit longer, but what did you want to be when you grew up? Like, in grade 5, what did you want to be when you grew up?
An actor on television.
Yeah. I love it. You said that with a really good voice too. What's your favorite productivity hack?
Ooh, not reading email.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's a good one. What's your favorite sort of tech tool go to? What's the tech that you're loving right now that's saving you time?
I'd say it's called Sanebox. It helps clean up my inbox, email inbox. So that helps.
Sanebox. How do you spell that? I need to learn about that.
S-A-N-E-B-O-X, Sanebox. So it uses AI to segment emails into various different, like it's saying now, it's saying later, it's saying next week. You know what I mean? So you don't have to go
and
do all that. Yeah.
Love it. Okay. That's a good one. If you could start a business tomorrow, what business would that be?
I would say it would be a data company, a data and analytics company. That's becoming a bigger part of what we do. And yeah, I see there's lots of opportunity there.
What's one thing you believe in, but many people disagree with you? One thing you believe in, and many people are like, oh, I don't agree with that.
I believe that we can unleash the most generous generation in the history of the world.
Love it. But hopefully most people believe that.
I don't know. I think people are kind of like, that sounds really cool. It's very aspirational.
Well, I'm on
but
that
like,
path. Yeah. So yeah. That's good. What book are you reading right now?
I just actually I was going through and reading Marketer as Philosopher. It's it's kind of an interesting, it's almost like a little, yeah, you can see it's like leather bound.
Yeah, it's like, it looks like it's leather bound.
Yeah, it's leather bound and it's kind of like these little reflections. So it's more like the philosophy of marketing, which is pretty interesting, but pretty
love
cool.
That. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite business book that you recommend the most to people?
Oh, gosh. Probably like Good to Great, I guess, is one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I read that double digits. I'm a fan. Every time I read it, I get something else out of it. Even having read it so many times, some people just ask me, are you just slow?
Yeah. No, it's kind of like find something new every time. Yeah.
I do. What's your favorite podcast?
Favorite podcast? Oh, it was actually kind of like a pleasure podcast. It's The Winds of Change. That's it. Winds of Change.
Yes.
It's about the CIA, like wrote the song, like Winds of Change by the Scorpions. It's fascinating. It's like a wild ride. Yeah.
Okay. And what's one question you wish I'd asked you and I didn't? And how would you have answered it?
Why do people give? That's a question that I've been obsessed with, like for the last probably 15 years.
I love that question.
Yeah.
What's your answer?
Well, it's something that we've run experiments to try to answer. And what I can tell you is that there is not one single answer. Like people give for a variety of different reasons.
Yeah.
Some of those reasons vary by generation. Like for example, older generations give out of a sense of duty, responsibility. It's the right thing to do. Other people give out of a sense of like wanting to belong to something or be part of something bigger than themselves. Some people give out of anger, frustration. There is a social ill in this world and this organization is going to change it. And my gift is going to go and create that social impact that I want to see. So there's so many different reasons. And that's why I think it's so fascinating. And it's so personal, right? It's very personal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question, by the way. Great question. And it's one that we should all think about when we think about, you know, beliefs and what we need to do going forward. Last question. What's one piece of advice you wished your younger self had received? Or maybe you received it, but you didn't hear it.
Man, I would say don't listen to the voices inside your head. Look, I mean, most people are incredibly insecure. I am too. You know what I mean? Like I come across like I'm confident or whatever, but like, you know, all of us have some level of insecurity and we have these voices in our head that are kind of convincing us that no, you can't, no, you're wrong. This will never work. And just if you listen to those things and give into those things, you'll never accomplish anything great. Right.
Yeah.
And so finding a way to silence that and being bold and courageous in the spite of the fact that you might be kind of like scared out of your mind. Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, as being an entrepreneur, every step we take, right, it's uncertain, right? We continuously, you know, operate in uncertainty. What's the best place if people want to reach out to you, learn more about your journey, next after? What's the best place? How do they get in contact?
If you can spell Kachuriak and type that into Google,
I can't even say it.
I was going to say, you'll find everything about me because I'm the only Kachuriak out there. But probably the easiest place is just to go to our website, nextafter.com. All of our research is published there. All of the experiments we've performed, everything is downloadable and free and you can go to town.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being here. I loved learning about your journey and you know, your last piece, be bold and courageous. Yeah. What else is there?
That's right. Well, thank you for having me, Shannon. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Tip Top is brought to you by Metronomics. To find out more about Metronomics and how this 20-plus-year-old proven system will save you time and money as you grow up your business, visit metronomics.com. That's metronomics.com. Also, search for Metronomics in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found.